Funding for this talk comes from TrialX, connecting patients to clinical trials.
Good morning and welcome to Cure Talks. I'm Priya Menon, scientific media editor of Cure Talks, joining you from India. And today we are talking about multiple myeloma. This is Cure Talks 112th episode. On the panel are myeloma survivors and advocates Alec Biru, Matt Goldman, and Cynthia Shulevsky. The talk is being co-hosted by myeloma survivor and advocate and editor of MyelomaSurvival.com, Gary Peterson. This is our third talk in the series on high-risk smoldering myeloma. In the previous episodes, we spoke with Dr. Sharji Kumar from Mayo Clinic regarding the ASCENT clinical trial, Dr. San Miguel from University of Navarra about his team's investigations into high-risk smoldering myeloma and probable cure. For this third talk today, we have with us Dr. Sigurður Kristinsson from University of Iceland discussing the ISTOP-MM initiative. As part of the ISTOP-MM study, 140,000 Icelanders over the age of 40 will have their blood samples tested for the precursor to multiple myeloma or monoclonal gammopathy of undetermined significance, MGUS. In the coming hour, we will be discussing this exciting and groundbreaking study. Before I hand over to Gary, I would like to remind the listeners that we will be addressing questions sent in towards the end of the show. If you would like to ask a question live, please press 1 on your keypads and let us know. You may also email them to priya@trialx.com or post them on the Cure Talks website. Gary, it's over to you.
All right. Thanks, Priya, and thank you so much for bringing this forum for all us myeloma patients. We certainly do appreciate your continued support. This is a very exciting Cure Talks for me, and Sigurður Kristinsson is the professor of the Faculty of Medicine at the University of Iceland and the Department of Hematology at Langspitali University Hospital, Iceland, and recently received a major grant to identify and treat precursor of blood cancer before disease develops. Now, he initiated this project and got the support of the International Myeloma Foundation to help fund it, but we certainly do thank you for your vision with regard to taking on this this cure. Recently, I saw Dr. Duryea, who was talking very much about this being an excellent program and one that might lead to a cure. The IMF chairman and co-founder of the IMF is who Dr. Duryea is, and he has the IMF's Black Swan Initiative, and he provided a grant with that initiative. The Black Swan Research Initiative is a groundbreaking research project aimed at curing myeloma. And Dr. Duryea states that we are extremely pleased to be able to support ISTOP-MM study, as we strongly believe that early diagnosis and treatment can lead to the cure of myeloma. So thank you, Doctor. Dr. Kristinsson, and I got to tell you that you are the first Sigurner I've ever met. And I don't even want to try to say your second, your middle name. What is your middle name?
Ingvi.
Okay. It's Y-N-G-V-I, which is unique as well. But Dr. Kristinsson,
it's quite easy.
We had recently talked with Dr. San Miguel. We also talked with Dr. Kumar, and they have provided us some outstanding news about treatments for high-risk smoldering myeloma. However, the big if, and I mean a big if, is how do we find it in the early stages? And would you please explain how ISTOP and how it might just be the answer to this big if?
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me to this talk, and good morning. So the ISTOP-MM study, which stands for Iceland Screens, Treats, or Prevents Myeloma, we are actually launching this study tomorrow morning here in Iceland. And I can go through the details maybe in a while, but there are two ways to diagnose high-risk smoldering myeloma. We are approaching the time where we are probably going to be treating these individuals. And these are, per definition, asymptomatic. They have no symptoms. So either we diagnose them by chance alone, or we screen. That is the only way to go. So we think that since we are approaching the era of treating asymptomatic individuals, we will at least have to research that or check the hypothesis that screening for these precursors is of benefit when it comes to overall survival.
Okay, and could you explain how it's going to, you know, what the elements are of the program?
Yeah, sure. So what we are doing now, we are sending out information to all individuals that are living in Iceland and are 40 years and older. These are approximately 140,000 people. They will get a purple envelope home with detailed information with the protocol and the design of the study. We will ask them to go online and visit the homepage of the study, which is mgus.is. And there they can provide informed consent using a code that they will get in the envelope. And then it takes about 1.5 to 2 minutes to sign up. And then what we are doing, we will gather a database with all these individuals that will provide informed consent. And then that's pretty much what the individuals have to do. Because what we are doing here is we are using a unique way of gathering samples, that is blood samples, from these individuals. So instead of opening up a big clinic to draw blood, we are utilizing the fact that most individuals in Iceland and in many Western countries do a blood test for whatever reason during a period of 3 years. So once these individuals do a blood test during 3 years following their informed consent, and this can be to check their cholesterol or thyroid or during acute illness or whatever reason, we will get a sample of their serum to screen for MGUS and myeloma. So we have in Iceland 35 laboratories that draw blood, and we have a collaboration with each and every one of them. So it doesn't matter where in the country these individuals do their blood sample, we will get this extra sample. This will be sent to us here in the capital of Iceland, Reykjavik, to the university. And then the serum will be sent to the binding site in Birmingham, UK, which is a major sponsor for the study, and they will perform protein electrophoresis and free light chain analysis. Now, after that, we will then screen all these individuals, say 140,000 people. We have done a small pilot study here, so we can see that about 4% of the Icelandic population in this age group actually have an MGUS, so we know that we will get a lot of MGUS individuals. These individuals that will have MGUS, they will enter a randomized clinical trial. So those with MGUS will be randomized to one of three arms. Arm one, we will not do any further follow-up. Arm two, we will do what is currently recommended by the International Myeloma Working Group. And then arm three, we will do a more intense workup, more intense follow-up, and we will be a little more aggressive when it comes to bone marrow sampling, because we want to capture these individuals as soon as they enter the smoldering phase, hopefully to enter another clinical trial, which will be a treatment protocol for smoldering myeloma. So this is the main outline of the study. We have a lot of other things that we are doing. We have a unique identifier or personal identifier here. So we have like a social security number in Iceland that everyone uses every day. And this is used for government maintained health registers. So So for all individuals, regardless if they have AMCUS or if they don't have AMCUS, we will get the information of all diseases that they have developed before they enter the study and after they enter the study and during the follow-up of the study. This is all diseases that they are diagnosed in hospitals or outpatient clinics and at the general practitioner office. We will get information on every prescription drug that they get. We will get information on every cancer that has been diagnosed before and after the study. And we will get information of vital status of all individuals, that is, if they are alive or dead, and if they are diseased, we will get information on causes of death. So this is the medical part. One very important issue is that we want to analyze quality of life of these individuals, because the literature is actually very, very sparse when it comes to quality of life of individuals in screening programs. Because one outcome of this study could be that that screening is beneficial when it comes to survival, but it costs anxiety and depression. So we will do that in all Icelanders before they enter the study. We will check their quality of life, anxiety, and level of happiness. And then this will be done throughout the study during the 5 or 7 years of follow-up. So we can follow individuals that have AMCUS and those that do not have AMCUS and show how their quality of life changes throughout the period of the study. And then we will also do a very intensive biobanking. Since we are doing a lot of bone marrow blood work and in urine, we will do a lot of biobanking for future studies. So if you come up with a new method that we think might be of importance when it comes to prognosis or progression or whatever, we will be able to go to the freezer in 5 or 10 or 15 years and check and get samples for whatever we can think of, basically.
Okay, you've actually answered most of my second question, but the part that wasn't answered would be in that this is more than just blood testing. You're doing a lot more, and you've outlined that a lot more. But one of the things that Dr. Duryea mentioned in his interview on YouTube was that parts of the project will include the use of the aggressive cure treatment protocols.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct, or did he get that wrong?
Yeah, no, that's true. That is the plan. We are working on the protocol, so the exact design of the treatment trial. So we have the randomized clinical trial that is only that is the AMCUS and the workup and the follow-up. And then we are planning to offer treatment to all individuals in Iceland that will develop smoldering myeloma or myeloma, active myeloma. So a treatment, and I cannot tell you exact details of the study since this is not approved yet. So that is certainly in the plan, because if we screen and detect the disease early and then then still wait for bone lesions or renal failure, then it doesn't make any sense to screen. Early detection has to lead to early treatment. Otherwise, we might as well just wait for the patient to enter the clinic with a fracture. And this is what we don't believe in anymore.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things
the patient
would like to see.
Is that they don't have symptoms.
For example, yeah. I had kidney failure, and boy, it'd
right.
been nice if that didn't happen. And I know another person who had a stroke because of her blood got very, very thick. And Pat Killingsworth, for example, who was a very dear friend of mine, had terrible bone pain and had his hips replaced and a bunch of other things. So we'd certainly like to see CRAB, the whole CRAB symptoms be a thing of the past. And this looks like a road to do that. Now, I know the IMF.
I'm
sorry.
Sorry. Continue.
I know the IMF has supported and funded this program, and so they have the cost of testing for each individual. So do you know what that is?
No. So that's actually the one of the main outcomes of this study. That is the cost effectiveness. And this is something that we need to, you know, that wait for the results. There are ways to calculate this. There are like qualies and stuff like this. It's a science of its own. So what we are trying to do is, since we're using infrastructure here, we are not drawing blood specifically for this study, and this has not been done in any screening program anywhere in the world, where you don't actually get the sample to do the screening for this pre-malignancy. So we are doing everything we can to lower the costs, but in the end, it will cost a lot. So we will have to show that this is really beneficial for the economy of for in Iceland and anywhere else in the world, to see that we have to show that this is effective, that this leads to prolonged overall survival, myeloma survival, and that it doesn't decrease quality of life, and that it doesn't get Iceland to go into bankruptcy. We were pretty close a few years ago, but we have recovered now. So this is something that is very important, but I cannot give you a price tag on that.
Okay. I know that when I looked at some of the information that I could find for Medicare, that it was about $150 U.S. Mm-hmm. to do all the tests once.
Right.
You know.
Yes.
So, you know, given that, I also went through and did my own quali analysis, and I found that. It was about $16,100 per life year saved.
Right.
So it was an unbelievably great payback compared to, you know, a lot of the drugs that we use now. And I'll publish that on my website at some time in the near future.
I would love to read that. Yeah. We might get the group discounts, right?
I'm sure you will. You know, when you do, you know, one at a time, $150.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm sure, you know, like for you, it's going to be $140,000. For the United States, it would be $149 million. So somehow I think you'd get a discount.
Yeah. We probably get a discount.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we have to see. Maybe there are some subgroups that we want to focus on. Maybe that's one of the results of this study, that we maybe we don't need to screen 40-year-olds. Maybe we should screen 60 to 80-year-olds. Maybe we should focus on those with a family history. Maybe we should. Some papers have shown that there's an association with obesity. So maybe that is something. We know that people of black race have higher incidence or double incidence of myeloma and MCOS. So maybe those are groups that we need to focus on. So we have to take that into account as well. But for Iceland, we are just screening everyone 40 years and older, and then we will have a lot of data to analyze later on.
And it'll provide a lot of insights into what needs to follow, for sure.
Yeah.
Jalik, are you online? Do you have questions for the doctor?
I am.
All right, Jalik, please.
Thank you. Thanks, Gary. Dr. Christiansen, congratulations. I want to start by saying congratulations on the success that Iceland had during the Euro Cup 2016.
Thank you.
To me, it really is a testament that even if you are small, with strategic plan, determination, and collaboration, you can achieve great success. It reminds me of actually the myeloma community. But specifically to iStop myeloma or iStop MM, it certainly is groundbreaking, but it is still voluntary from what I understand. You know, the Iceland community has to opt into the program. How are you planning to convince Icelanders to willingly opt into the program?
So people participants have to sign informed consent. So we are using several approaches for this. Icelanders are very keen on participating in big studies like this. So we know that from the Icelandic Cancer Society, which is one of the major collaborators with us here, they have almost 80% participation rate, and we have other major institutions, resource institutions, that have similar figures of 75 to 80% participation rate. And it, and usually that is for studies that are much more difficult, and it demands participants to do a lot of tests and spend a few days, you know, answering different questions on quality of life and everything. So we are going to have a campaign here in Iceland, where we have already approached media, and we will be able to, since Iceland is a small country, it's not that difficult to get, you know, like on national TV and stuff like that. We have sent out a brochure that is, I think, quite good with detailed information. And we have the first female president of the world, who is Vigdís Finnbogadóttir, the Icelandic president that used to be president here. She is endorsing the study. And actually, finally, once we have asked people to participate, we will send out another brochure a few weeks after that. And then once the ones that haven't replied, either yes or no, we will actually sit down and call them. So we're just going to sit down and spend 2 months calling every Icelander and asking them to participate. So that is the plan.
Is there a time frame where you expect the program not only to kick, but for the people to start signing up into the program? Is it 2016, 2017?
Yeah, so tomorrow they will be able to start signing up. Tomorrow morning, and then we will actually, it will be open for informed consent for 3 years, because that is the timeline that we will take to get blood samples. But in all these studies, we will have a campaign, so we will try to own the, you know, the talk of the street here in Iceland. So people should be like in the bakery. We want them to be talking about the iStop-MM study. So we anticipate that most of the individuals will actually sign up in the first few weeks. Then we will have points where we go out to the media again with advertisement. Then we anticipate that we'll have another wave of participation. And then finally, when we call them like 3 months from now, we think that we will get or hope at least 80% participation.
Okay. So, preventing high-risk myeloma from progressing is great for those that are at the MGUS or smoldering stage. All of the four people that are asking you questions today are way past smoldering, and most of them have been treated for myeloma. And for the past, where the cow has already left the barn and have full-fledged myeloma, how do you see this iStop-MM helping enhance the strategic plan to cure myeloma in the future?
Yes, so we know that every myeloma, active myeloma, actually goes through the precursor stages. So they go from MGUS to smoldering to active myeloma. Obviously, we were using this during the screening. We will probably capture some with active myeloma, and these will be offered treatment according to standard of care or perhaps a clinical trial. But the remaining, those that would have been diagnosed in 2 or 3 or 4 years with active myeloma due to renal failure, fractures, anemia, or something like that, those will hopefully be captured in this screening program. So before they actually are diagnosed with active myeloma, hopefully a few years, we will be able to intervene and reverse, or what we want is prevent myeloma rather than treat it. And some people think that we know that active myeloma is genetically very heterogeneous and complicated once it is diagnosed, whereas smoldering myeloma, the MCOS, is less heterogeneous. So we probably not have one magic bullet for killing all myeloma cells. We will probably always have to have a combination therapy. But at least in theory, we do not know if it's true in reality that we might be able to cure myeloma at the early stage because it hasn't gone and differentiated to a complicated disease, which is still incurable.
Do you anticipate some of the study results being used to actually help find a better treatment for those that have that already have their myeloma has progressed to full blown myeloma?
Excuse me.
So the results of the study, do you anticipate the results from ISTOP-MIME, some of the findings being used to find better treatment for those patients that have full-blown myeloma?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. We will pretty much diagnose every myeloma patient in Iceland during this screening program. So we will get information. How is it to have a uniform aggressive treatment, hopefully with the best available agents? So, I mean, but this is not a randomized clinical trial for the optimal treatment of active myeloma. There are other study designs that will answer that question. So we will not have two different treatment arms for active myeloma. We are believing in early detection, early and upfront treatment. Everyone gets the same, and hopefully we can cure some or even a lot of smoldering myeloma. Then what is the best treatment for active myeloma? Then we have to do a randomized clinical trial with the standard of care and some novel agents.
Okay. So, Gary, my last question was around cost, but I think you have already kind of covered it. So maybe you can go to the next panel member.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Matt?
That is Matt. Thanks, Yelich. I was going to say, thanks for your time. I was going to say good morning, but I realized we're all across the globe, so good day. I'm just curious a little bit. Myeloma is a fairly rare cancer. What was the motivation for this, or how were you able to get a national testing program approved?
Yeah, so actually, the idea, we have been thinking about myeloma and MCOS for many years. So we have been, you know, thinking about what is the evidence for doing what we're doing. We have evidence for treatment of myeloma, but there are not many prospective studies there are no prospective studies with different workup and follow-up strategies in MCOS. So we were thinking a little bit about that. Do we need to follow MCOS individuals? Is there evidence for that? Or maybe we should spend our money on something else, like treating, you know, another disease like autism or another cancer or whatever. So we did a study a few years ago where we looked at if follow-up is of importance for MCOS. So what we did is we looked at all myeloma patients diagnosed in Sweden, where I was working at the time, about 14,000 patients. And we looked at those with myeloma that had a known precursor, that were diagnosed with MCOS before, compared to those myeloma patients that were not diagnosed with MCOS. We know that everyone has MCOS, but some of the patients are diagnosed with MCOS and some of them just turn up with full-blown myeloma. So there's no biological difference between the two myeloma patients in the study. It's just that the patient and the physician knows they have MCOS. And we could see that those that had a precursor diagnosis, they actually had a superior survival, with 15% longer survival compared to myeloma patients that did not know they had MGUS. There's another study from the U.S., from the SEER database, that has had exactly the same results. And interestingly, when we looked at those patients based on the amount of M protein, so those that had a low risk MGUS, who typically do not develop into myeloma, those that had low risk MGUS and still got myeloma, those had the worst survival of the myeloma patients. So we think that our study is at least indicative of the importance of follow-up in MGUS individuals. And perhaps those that have low risk, they were probably seeing a physician annually, but they were focusing on other diseases like their hypertension or diabetes or whatever, and the MGUS was sort of lost during the course of the disease. So this gave us the idea that if MGUS, the follow-up for MGUS is important, then probably we could at least think about if screening would be beneficial. So we had a long discussion about that, a few of us in the myeloma community. Some thought that we should start the routine screening for MGUS, others thought that we should not start routine screening, and we were sitting there in between, and we thought that we should at least study the importance or the benefit of screening. So that is the background to this study. Mm-hmm. And then we talked and had several meetings with the binding site collaborate with us on the SPEP and free light chains. And then we obviously got major funding from the IMF and the Black Swan Research Initiative. And that has led us to launching the study tomorrow.
Okay. So getting the funding, and you've touched on this already, but getting the funding from IMF was probably really important to this moving forward, right?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. This does cost a lot of money. There are a lot of people that are working directly on the project. The campaign to get individuals to sign up, calling all Icelanders, takes a lot of people and effort, and you know, doing bone marrows and blood work to follow every Icelander for 5 or 10 years. It does cost a lot, so we would not have been able to do this without the support from the IMF and the Biden side.
Yeah, well, it's great. Do you know, are the rates for myeloma in Iceland comparable, mm-hmm. more or less, than in the U.S. or elsewhere in Europe?
Yes, we have exactly the same as in, you know, in Western Europe and in the U.S.
Wow.
So it's about six per 100,000 per year.
Six per 100,000?
It's exactly the same, and MGUS is about 4%, so it's exactly the same.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
And then finally, my last question is, there's a little feedback here. You touched on this already. You touched about quality of life, and when you're doing the screening, sort of tracking people, and you also mentioned race and gender, but in your screening, are you also looking at trying to go backwards in your tracking of folks and look at sort of what their lifestyle was previous to even having MGUS or smoldering myeloma? You know, what have they been exposed to? What sort of conditions have they been living in? That sort of thing.
Yeah. So what we are going to be looking at through like a linkage of databases. We will, as I talked about it before, get information on other diseases. So not only will we look at what happens to those with MGUS compared to those without MGUS when it comes to infections and fractures and thrombosis and whatever have you, we will also be able to look back and analyze if any given disease is a risk factor for getting myeloma. And we will also have questions about environmental exposures, socioeconomic status, type of work and stuff like that. But this will be done primarily with those MCAS individuals that we meet, because the only people that we actually have physical contact with is all the people with MCAS. So we will include this in the study as well. We will get email addresses from individuals that want to provide their email addresses, so we can also later get, if we have some new great ideas, go back and ask whatever question we want, basically.
Okay, so something, when you start analyzing the data, if something jumps out at you, you might be able to dig a little deeper or do additional research.
Yes. So we, yeah, so we get the informed consent, and we ask for permission to get back to the participants and ask additional questions. Also, we ask those that do not have MCAS, we ask them for to come for a visit, like 1-to-1 ratio, so one control for every MCAS individuals, for biobanking, for flow cytometry and stuff like that. And I forgot to mention that we also have a great collaboration with Dr. Ola Landgren at the Memorial Sloan Kettering in the US, which will lead a lot of the correlative science. So there we will use information on MCAS and controls as well. So we have built in like a backup or plan B, C, and D to be able to really gather and squeeze out as much as we can, because I don't think that anyone will do another study like this in the coming years.
No. Okay, thanks. This is awesome. And I know this is something that Gary and others have really been pushing, and to see that you're doing this is fantastic. Thanks for your time. That's all I have.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Matt. Cindy, your question?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yay, Cindy's here.
Yeah.
Hi.
I think this is a great study. Thanks for taking part of it, Doctor. And if I ask some questions that have been answered, forgive me, I joined in a little late. So I think my first question is about, once you do the screening, if someone is identified with high-risk smoldering multiple myeloma, as part of the informed consent form, do they agree to be in a trial immediately, or do they still have that choice of watching and waiting?
Yeah, so they all have the choice to do whatever they want. So the only thing that they agree by participating in the screening study is to donate blood for screening, and then if they turn up to have MCAS, then they enter the randomized clinical trial. And actually, before we have the clinical treatment trial ready, those with active myeloma and high-risk smolder will be treated according to standard of care. So what we are working on now is to add a treatment trial with not only high-risk smoldering, but all smoldering individuals. And so the only thing we will do is offer smoldering myeloma patients to enter a treatment trial, and that is completely voluntary, of course. If they want to watch and wait, then that is fine.
Okay, good. My next question is about genomics and genomic data. What kind of genomic testing will you be doing on the population? Are you just doing the standard, if they test to have like myeloma or a precursor condition, will it be standard FISH testing? Is it going to be the GEP testing? Are you doing next generation sequencing, mutation panels? I'm just curious as to what type of genomic data are you going to be gathering.
Yeah, right. So this is there are two things that I want to say about the genetic testing. One is the tumor, if you can say that, the genetics of the MGUS, that is done on at the Memorial Sloan Kettering. They are designing very exciting genetic panels that they will be doing. We will be doing this, and we will be doing next generation sequencing all these individuals and gene expression profiling as well. We will also put a lot in the freezer because, I mean, as I talked about, this does cost a lot. So I mean, we want to do everything at once, but we also have to just, you know, think what we're doing. So we are putting a lot of cells in the freezer, and then we will do these subsequently. Then there's the other thing with genetics that I think it's very exciting and that can only be done here in Iceland. That is, we know the germline genetic profile of the Icelandic population. So we have a company called Decode Genetics that has done whole genome sequencing of the almost entire Icelandic population. More than 140,000 people have been whole genome sequenced because they have Icelanders have donated their DNA to this company. We also know how everyone in Iceland is related to one another, and this dates back to the first Icelander to step foot in Iceland in 874. So we know how everyone is related, and we know whole genome sequencing or genetic profile, if you will, of the Icelandic population. So what we are going to be doing here is we are going to incorporate that in the risk models or for progression. So we are going to analyze how different genetic variants that are associated with MGUS or myeloma, how they affect your prognosis or your progression risk. So you're basically, you're born with a tendency to develop myeloma. We know that for those that are of black race, they have twice the risk of myeloma and MGUS. We also know some germline genetic variants that are quite common, that they give you a risk of maybe 50% increased risk of getting MGUS and myeloma. But we don't know if this MGUS or myeloma is biologically different from a non-hereditary myeloma. So this is something that I think is very exciting, and we are going to do whole genome sequencing of all the MGUS individuals and analyze the outcome based on that. So this is a long answer to your question.
Okay, that sounds great. The other thing is, I hear you're cooperating a lot with Dr. Langren at Memorial Sloan Kettering. I'm wondering about the data that you're going to gather from this trial that you're doing. Who would have access to that data? Would it be just the investigators in the iSCOT multiple myeloma trial?
Yes.
Or would it be the people in the working group, the International Myeloma Working Group? I'm just wondering who has access to the data that you're going to be finding.
So the data will be kept in a secure computer with several passwords. Every individual in the or participant in the study are we are using an anonymous code, so no one can be tracked or anything like that. And also the database is only accessible to very few persons in my team. But obviously this is something that is of importance, and we love to collaborate with every myeloma or MGUS interested researcher, patients, and other individuals that want to use this data. So basically what we are thinking is that people that have some interesting questions to ask, they contact us, and whether it is getting data that can be analyzed or getting samples that need to be tested, we are open to all kinds of collaboration. But the data, according to the IRB, is to be kept here at the university.
Okay, thank you. I can't wait to hear some of the results of this trial. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. Freya, is there anybody online with a question?
Yeah, I think we have Dana online. Dana, you can please ask your questions.
Yes, hi. It's Dana Holmes. Hi, Dr. Christensen. Thank you so much for doing this program. It's really exciting to listen to all of these great plans you have in place. I have a question. Concerning the screening test, am I to understand that for your study, you're going to be using an SPEP and free light chains? Is that correct?
Yes. So we do SPEP on everyone, free light chain on everyone. those with a suspected M spike on SPEP, we will do immunofixation, and everyone with a pathological FLC ratio will do immunofixation.
Okay.
So this is the screening.
Yeah. Wouldn't, though, an IFE pick up even the low or the M spikes that are too low to actually quantify? So in essence, if you don't do an IFE first, could you potentially miss a small population of people who have those really low M spikes? Or is the test that you are doing so sensitive that you wouldn't miss them without an IFE?
No, I think that's a very important point. So, I mean, every test has its limitations. And we would capture more individuals with MGUS by doing immunofixation on everyone, certainly. But we also know, based on data from the Mayo Clinic, for example, that those that are SPEP negative with normal FLC ratio that still have something on immunofixation, their risk of progression is much lower than standard MGUS. So this is like super low risk MGUS, if you will. It does add a lot of individuals that we will, you know, quote unquote, have MGUS. This will probably not be something that we want to screen for in the future, given the low risk. So we would just add a lot of individuals, add anxiety to that, and probably of low yield or benefit. So that was our thinking.
Okay, I understand that. Am I also to understand that this study hopes to lead to treatment? And again, I understand that it would be up to the patient whether they wanted to continue watch and wait or treat. But all smoldering patients, because right now the IMF is supporting the ASCEND trial for high-risk smoldering patients. But your study hopes to enable and develop a treatment that all smoldering, even the low-risk smoldering patients, could participate in?
So the low-risk patients, these are individuals with less than 10% plasma cells in the bone marrow, but more than 3 grams per deciliter M-spec. So what we are planning is actually smoldering with more than 10% plasma cells in the bone marrow. And this is not if we get one biopsy or aspirate with like 11% plasma cells. That doesn't mean that they enter a clinical treatment trial. We have a protocol for that these will be reanalyzed 2 or 3 months later, and if they have 2 consecutive bone marrows with more than 10%.
Okay, yeah. Wow.
That's exciting. Yeah, I think that's... So we are going all in with this early detection, early treatment, and because we strongly believe that is the way to go.
Yes, that's amazing. I have a smoldering myeloma Facebook group, and we have a few of the patients from Dr. Langreen's NIH CRD trial, and you know, they've been finished with it and out of it now, and been monitored for the last 3 years, and they're all MRD negative, and it's so exciting for fellow smoldering patients to know that they continue that status. So obviously, that early intervention certainly worked for them. Now, Dr. Christensen, what would you...
I find the optimal treatment, because as we talked about here in the beginning, these are asymptomatic. They are doing great. Some people aren't doing great, but for the purpose of their myeloma, they are asymptomatic. So we don't want to give them a very, you know, toxic or aggressive treatment that gets them sick and, you know, lots of complications, but... I think that the time has come where we have very effective therapies with low toxicity. So I think the time is right to at least study that. I'm not saying that all smoldering patients should be treated, this is what we are studying. This is the research question, that early detection, early treatment can cure or prolong the lives of individuals with MGUS and smoldering.
Yeah. Terrific. Dr. Christensen, once a person has been diagnosed with MGUS, whether it be low risk, intermediate, high risk, what, in your opinion, is the best evaluation and monitoring model to follow these MGUS patients? Because, you know, we have a lot of MGUS patients in these Facebook groups that go to local oncologists and hematologists who are not really familiar with MGUS or don't have a lot of MGUS patients. So they basically just tell them, oh, it's a benign, you know, condition. Just go home. Don't worry about it. Don't go on the internet. Don't learn anything about it. Come back in a year or two and you know, we'll run another test. So, you know, it's very disturbing for me as a smoldering patient who was initially diagnosed as having garden variety MGUS, only to find out when I pushed for my own bone marrow biopsy initially that indeed it was smoldering myeloma. So I wonder, what would your recommendation be to MGUS patients who have been told they have MGUS going forward? What should they be looking for?
Yeah, so that is the main, you are highlighting the main problem of the literature here. There are no studies. There is no real evidence from prospective randomized clinical trial to guide physicians or patients to the optimal workup or follow-up. Then there is the International Myeloma Working Group that have a lot of experts who have sat down and made a document or guidelines that is what they think is the best way to do it. And I support these guidelines. I think that is the best we have, but we just have to remember that this is really not based on any strong evidence. And that is one of the main reasons that we are doing this study with three different arms. So we want to see if intensive or quite aggressive workup and follow-up leads to more smoldering, more active myeloma that can be treated earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But as of now, we just recommend what is recommended by the International Myeloma Working Group. But the intervention arm, or the third arm of this study, then we do more than it is currently recommended by these guidelines. So we will do bone marrow in all individuals, including those with low-risk MGUS. We are doing low-dose CT of the skeleton in everyone instead of plain skeletal survey.
Mm-hmm.
And we are doing lots of other individuals and more intense follow-up. So that is what we think is better. But the key word here is think.
Uh-huh.
But what we want to do is 5 years from now, we will hopefully know what is the best way, because then we will have answers from this study.
Okay, terrific.
Okay. Terrific.
Thank you so very much for your time and
for taking my question.
Thank you.
And thank you, Dana, as always.
Thanks, Gary.
Thank you.
Yeah, Doctor, we've got one question from... That was sent in, and it's how realistic is it to anticipate a vaccine or treatment that can be administered at the MGUS stage to prevent the progression, the smoldering multiple myeloma or multiple myeloma?
Yes, I think that is a totally different story compared to the smoldering, because if you are going to offer treatment to a disease or a condition that 4% of the elderly population have that disease, like MGUS, only 1% of them will actually turn and progress myeloma each year. So in 20 years, only 20% of these individuals will have progressed to myeloma or other lymphoma. So for a treatment to be recommended for MGUS to prevent or a vaccine, then it has to have literally no side effects, and it has to be very simple. I mean, it probably won't have like a vaccine, just one injection, and then everyone, you prevent myeloma in everyone. I mean, we are really not there that we can talk about treating MGUS, giving this. We cannot treat 4% of the population with any drug, I think. But in the future, what we hope to gain from this study, and I know a lot of MGUS research groups are doing this, we want to try to optimize the prognostic scores so we can identify high-risk embryos that is better defined compared to the current prognostic scores, where we can identify high-risk embryos that are sort of in the smoldering category, and maybe we can offer treatment to those.
I recently saw Dr. Kumar, Mayo Clinic had done a retrospective analysis, and that analysis indicated that 30% of patients don't make it a year.
And so he said,
part of it was from delayed diagnosis, and part of it was because you need an expert who treats you. And I think that was clearly very important. The other thing is Myeloma UK put out an analysis, and it said that 1 in 5 patients don't last 2 months.
We have seen that in our registry studies. Early deaths are really high, and this is, you know, due to infections and, you know, the disease. And these are elderly individuals. So, I mean, that is, when we go to the conferences and listen to, discussions about treatment, we sometimes hear about patients that have gotten like 15 lines of therapy with different agents. But when we look at the real world data, a lot of patients, actually only 1/3 of patients get third line of therapy or more. So most patients diagnosed with myeloma in the community do not get more than 3 or 4 lines of therapy.
Another thing that I had seen, again, I think it might have been a European analysis, which said, and Dr. Morgan had stated this, and he said that he called it a bit of a scandal, he would in his British accent, that myeloma patients, 25% of them, it takes 1 year from symptom to diagnosis.
Yes.
You think about that, and you also recognize that apparently there's been also an analysis that said without treatment, the average life expectancy is less than a year. So effectively, 25% of patients are dead at diagnosis, and that's a bit of a scandal. So all your work is going to help eliminate that if we can just catch it early. So
it's
so exciting, I think.
And these are a lot of non-specific signs and symptoms, like backache or mild anemia, and these symptoms are so vague and they can, mean a lot of things. And if you think about it, if you take a random 70-year-old, a lot of them have a little bit of ache have pain somewhere, and they are a little bit tired, and their hematocrit or hemoglobin is a little bit low, and you cannot really suspect or myeloma in all these individuals. So, unfortunately, this is the case that these patients are not diagnosed. There is a doctor delay and there is patient delay, and screening will potentially eliminate that. I agree.
Priya, any other questions from our callers?
That's all, Gary. Thank you, Dr. Christensen, for your time and sharing all this information with us. You're almost at the end of our time.
Thank you.
Gary, Matt, Yelek, and Cindy, thank you so much for your participation. And Dr. Christensen, we wish the study all the very best.
The talk and its transcript will
be available on the Cure Talks website. And please visit curetalks.com for more details on upcoming shows. Thank you, everyone. Have a nice day.
Thank you so much, Doctor.